Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 554 for comics originally released on March 21st, 2018. Now, starting us off in DC is Aquaman number 34. You've been following Aquaman the whole time, James?
Not from the beginning, but I've actually caught up and read everything. That was one of the ones you and Drew were talking about how great Aquaman was. So I went and I got, I think it was the first two in trade, and I'm on from there. And this is actually my favorite DC title.
Okay, good. I'm glad you've been reading it up until now. Aquaman's one of those characters that over the years they've done a lot of very different takes with, from the Sub-Diego stuff to the more recent Amnesty Bay to the even more recent, I almost want to call it kind of the underwater Gotham City approach to Atlantis, which, okay, while it was a little weird and derivative, it worked surprisingly well. This issue, though, man, different artists than they had, because they had Stepan Sege, I can't always get his last name right, for some of the stuff they've been doing recently, and I think his art is just fantastic.
Oh, he's an amazing artist. I've loved everything he did at Top Cow and now DC.
Yeah, and man, was he prolific at Top Cow.
He was writing, he drew almost the entire line for a while there. It was insane.
Yeah, he did Witchblade for years while concurrently doing, I think, some graphic novels on the side and maybe another book.
Yeah, if they would have kept this title double shipping, I think he could have drawn both issues. He's good.
Yeah, I think so. Alas, that's not the artist we have this month or this issue.
Correct. This is someone new. I'm trying to remember her name. It's Jones. I can't remember her first name.
It's Kelly Jones, actually.
Kelly Jones. Okay, yeah. I've written down Jones.
Don't know that that's a female. I think isn't he the guy who did Dead Man or whatever at one point?
Oh, okay. Yeah, possibly. I just assumed Kelly girl, but possibly, yeah, it could be a guy. I wasn't familiar with Kelly Jones, though, and it's definitely a downgrade in the art.
It explains actually a lot, because one of the things I do with my notes is I grab the solicitation blurb, and they had Mirko Kolak as the artist. This is not that.
So wow.
I'm wondering if there was a last-minute substitution on art.
That's possible, and I don't know if something happened to him or what, but yeah, the arts just seemed a little rougher in this. I mean, it's definitely serviceable. You can read it. It's not disgusting to look at, but it was definitely a downgrade in the art department, which I was disappointed with.
Which, I mean, part of it, I think, Kelly Jones's style is one that I don't tend to gravitate towards, although it's not as, I mean, his dead man looked almost, dead. Which, gee, go figure. But not the way he would classically look as, say, you know, a Neil Adams approach or some such. This, a lot of what I was kind of thinking was just not so great art. I can also say could have just been somebody just slamming through an issue to get it done pretty quickly. Not saying that is what happened, I'm saying it could be.
And that's possible. I mean, some of the facial expressions were off, and I noticed the line work. The inks were very heavy. The shading was really heavy, which you don't have to be as detailed if you're going that dark. So it could be that he was in a hurry, just last-minute substitution.
Yeah, yeah. Which, if that's the case, I mean, more power to him for, you know, getting something out to get the book out on time, even if he may not have had the full time he would have normally had or some such.
Definitely.
Again, may not have happened that way, don't know, but to me the art was not a draw on this issue, no pun intended, whereas, again, some of the stuff we've gotten recently has just been amazing.
Yeah, it's been jaw-dropping. Middleton with the covers, I always forget his cover B because I think he's an amazing artist. And then, I don't know how you pronounce the last name, Sajic or Sejic or whatever
his name
is. I
think it's Sage.
Sage, okay. He's just amazing. Like I said, like him since Top Cow. He's been great.
Yeah, he and his wife are both very talented. There was an interview they did for CBR a couple of years back, and Jonah made a point of trying to check his pronunciation on it, which is the only reason I think I've got it even halfway close.
Well, thank you.
But his style has a fluidity and almost a grace to it and stuff, which really was working well with Aquaman. The whole approach, though, when they that creative team took over with Abnett and stuff, of let's go a bit more Atlantean, do almost an underwater King Arthur kind of a riff again or whatever, play up the royalty aspect, was working and not working for me in certain areas. I liked how we were finally really exploring Atlantis, the city.
Yes.
But we have this you know, new guy on the throne who's just, a foil for Aquaman, really. I mean, King Wrath here is everything, you know, Atlantis shouldn't want in a ruler, but unfortunately has. And this entire issue was his backstory.
Exactly. He it was kind of weird because, not knowing a lot about Aquaman from my past, I basically looked at King Wrath and I was like, I didn't know how prolific a character he was in previous volumes, but it was just kind of weird that he just kind of popped up and took over the throne, like you said, just stuck in there. And then I knew nothing about him until this issue. And this issue was the issue of Aquaman with no Aquaman. It was strictly his backstory. So all about Coram Wrath.
You know, I didn't do any Google search on this, but I'm thinking this Wrath character is new to this run.
So this is a new character for... Okay.
Well, I'm thinking that. I could be wildly mistaken.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. And so this is the backstory we needed for maybe him being an antagonist, you know, to be understood somewhat. But I think they could... The one thing I think that was amiss with Dan Abnett writing this is I think they could have sprinkled in some of his backstory when he was introduced and, you know, the fight over the crown, instead of just one issue, you know, 6 months down the road, and here it all is.
Absolutely, because while I thought this guy was a decent antagonist for Aquaman, I felt this was almost a little too late, or too much too late, or something.
Exactly, and it's just like a one-shot almost that's way down the road. Take a breather, here it is. And it just, it felt off, the pacing and everything from the story that I've been reading.
Well, and I read the previous issue just a night or two before reading this one, and it ended with Aquaman having gotten the Thorn of Crowns, which had been a barrier around Atlantis. He'd taken that down, he'd rescued Mira, and then he was heading back to take this guy on. So it's like, okay, next time we get the confrontation, the climax of the story, and then, no, let's pause and give this guy's backstory so we know what he's really about.
And that was the frustrating part, because now that it's gone to a monthly book, we have to wait 2 months to see what happens, because we didn't know this was going to happen. We didn't know it was just going to be a one-off with no Aquaman at all.
Yeah, I think that was a mistake. And I think
agree.
This issue really doesn't reflect what the book is.
I agree. If I picked this up and this was my first time reading, you know, Aquaman, I would have not been interested to go along, you know, to carry on with this book. I mean, thankfully, I read all the 33 issues that came before this, but yeah, this was not something that's going to hook somebody new to the comic.
Well, I'm also wondering if Wrath is going to be around much longer.
Yeah, I have a feeling. Yeah, they're setting him up. Here he is. Here's his backstory, and the way they did it so roughly that you know, probably the next 2 or 3 issues it'll be wrapped up and he'll be gone.
At which point, what's the point of this issue?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. I was just a little bit let down from what I've been reading all along. So inside of here, you know, you get the background of Coram Wrath, him as a kid growing up, and Dan Abnett, he tries to get you to feel for the guy. He's growing up as a ninth tried, which I guess is the lowest level of people in Atlantis, and I think he and his dad, they were called Hadalin, which is basically the toilers, the stonemasons or whatever, you know, the manual labor class of Atlantis society. And so, you know, they try to make you feel bad for him and showing him and his friend Cadaver. I guess Cadaver, that's a nice name to have as a friend growing up. But so you kind of feel bad for the guy and then you stop feeling bad for him with how it ends. They try to turn him into the ultimate baddie.
Yeah, it was, like I said, a little too late for this, and
there was no build up for it. It was disappointing.
Yeah, it cut the flow of the series, which, I mean, doesn't really reflect on the issue so much as the title. I think to your point, if they'd sprinkled some of this in a little bit more throughout, that would have helped. I think also if maybe Dolphin had been captured and he was, you know, pontificating towards her or something like that, and we at least had that as a subplot or something. Something to make it feel like it was in the here and now, not in the, it's in the past.
Exactly. Yeah, this was not with the current story. It's definitely in the past. And so the only part that's interesting, I don't know how much this will come into play, is the spin on magic, how you find out that Wrath is addicted to magic, and how they kind of get introduced to a demon of the underworld. So, you know, the people from Atlantis, they spend too much time focused on the gods. You know, I'm assuming, I don't know who the gods are because they haven't really spoken on them, but I'm assuming Neptune or something like
Poseidon
that.
Poseidon or something like that. Poseidon, who knows, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know who the gods are. But they said, oh, they focus too much on the gods. The demons are way more powerful. So maybe that's something that'll be built going forward. It's something that can impact the story.
You know, it's interesting because we've spent enough time in Atlantis now, and Abnett's been doing a lot of world building in this area. The fact that we don't really feel like we've got a good grasp on the religion, either singular or plural, of Atlantis is kind of interesting.
It is. Until this issue, I didn't even know there were gods or demons or their beliefs. Because, yeah, like you said, it hasn't even been touched on. This was one of the issues, or one of the books, when they took it off the bi-weekly shipping. I was kind of disappointed because I liked the pace of it and I enjoyed the stories. And now that they're coming out monthly, I don't know how much time before, you know, Dan Abnett's contract's up, that he can get into the backstory and the world building. Hopefully a long time he can be here, but it tends not to happen nowadays with the writers and the big two.
Yeah. He's been doing some good stuff. I personally didn't feel this issue was as reflective of that, but certainly it's been a fun title. I was kind of disappointed with this issue, particularly having just the other night read the previous issue. I'm going to go with a C+ on this. I think the rest of the title is much better than this. It was just not the best issue to review, is really what it comes down to.
Definitely. And with me, I was looking at this. It's a good title. And despite what we're saying tonight, I recommend everyone to read Aquaman because Dan Abnett's a great writer.
Mm-hmm.
The art is normally top-notch. It's really great. It's one of my favorite books that DC's publishing. But this issue, if I have to look at it by itself, is more like a C-. It's something that wouldn't have me hooked. It would be something that I'd hold on to through an arc to see if it got better. And that's where it is for me, C-.
Yeah, no, I can understand that, and I agree entirely. The title is much better than this. This was just akin to reviewing the interlude or whatever of a play versus the play itself, it seemed like.
Definitely.
Just kind of weird. I hate it when that happens, but it does happen from time to
time.
Me
too. I was so excited to review Aquaman this week, and now I'm kind of disappointed.
Well, when they've got a new story arc or some such, maybe we'll circle back on this and try to find a better issue to review, because they've been doing some really good stuff with this character, and it's one that often doesn't get the credit he's due.
Definitely. Well, I'm up for that.
Cool. Shall we move over to our Marvel book?
Yes. Now I'm happy.
This is The Mighty Thor, number 705. This is a story that they have been building and building and building and building and building for quite some time. This is The Death of the Mighty Thor, part 6, and it actually includes the death of the Mighty Thor, which is sad. Jason Aaron has been on this book for a long time, and this story has been a long time in coming.
Yes.
And what I liked about this is, not only did we get the moment they were kind of promising of you know, her dying, we finally get to see the first moment she picks up the hammer.
Finally, yes, that was good. I like that.
I almost want to nitpick a little on the coloring of part of that, although part of it is beautiful with the Rainbow Bridge and some of that stuff. But when we get the close-up on the hammer and it's got, if she be worthy, there's a little bit of a shine or whatever to the she, but I think they could have highlighted that a little bit better.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But getting that kind of beginning moment, ending with the ending moment we did, I thought was a nice kind of, not bookending, but balance to the story. I mean, it was sad to see the moment where she reverts back to Jane Foster that one last time.
Yeah.
But they've been building this, they've been setting this up, they've been, I think, playing reasonably fair. And this is a story that, like I said, has been going on for years. I mean, decades, if you go as far back as Jane Foster's first appearance, which I think was in Journey into Mystery number 84 back in 1962.
Wow.
And, I mean, they've played out the emotions here. They've done a good job setting up this version of Thor and this era of Thor. And, you know, it's again, a very satisfying moment near the end of this chapter, of this part of the Thor saga. I say near the end because I think next issue kind of closes off this run of this Thor, which I'm sure is likely to be an epilogue, the funeral, or, you know, what have you, of sorts. And I'm looking forward to that, too.
Me too, definitely. Yeah, I really like this issue. It was very strong. Jason Aaron, when he loves something, when he's passionate about something that he's working on, there's not many writers that can touch him. You can see the passion in his work all through the Thor run. He's very rarely had a bad issue, and this is going on, I don't know how long he's been on it, probably 5 years. And this is something that I will buy. I was telling Drew on the Slack channel, I'll buy it in the omnibus format when it comes out, because this thing deserves an omnibus, and it's been epic from the very first Gore the God Butcher arc to this. And Jane Foster, a lot of people were upset when she was introduced. Oh, this isn't Thor, you know, we're upset, you know, Thor's not a you know, just a title that, you know, God of Thunder isn't a title that's given to someone. But this story, I like Jane Foster. And I'm not saying I like one better than the other or whatnot, but we were able to enjoy Odin's Son and Jane Foster at the same time. It wasn't like we were giving up on our past by enjoying her story.
Yeah.
And this was really a satisfying conclusion. Not that you're satisfied with the death of someone, but with what was going on in her life, fighting cancer, you know, the struggles that come with that, and to see her, if you guys have read the last issue, you know, she hasn't been able to get her cancer treatment. And every time she picks up the hammer and she turns into Thor, she's not able to stay in the hospital and get her chemotherapy or whatever it is that she needs to fight off the cancer that's eating her alive. And for her in the last issue, they're like, if you touch the hammer one more time, you know, you're dead. And just to see Odinson, he was literally just ticked off at her. You killed yourself as soon as he saw her when she flew in as Thor to help fight the Mangog. You know, it's an emotional thing when he's upset. I'm sure he's happy that you're there to help us here in Asgard fight this creature that the gods can't fight. And she's willing to not think of herself, and I'm going to let myself die to help people and to do my duty. So there's some emotional, you know, tugs on the heartstrings there. And I really liked the story. It was great. The art in this was amazing too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Russell Dodderman did just a fantastic job on the art, and you know, it conveyed all the emotion it needed to, and all of the big spectacle it needed to. And it's interesting because on the writing side of it, anytime a hero goes and fights the big fight, there's the chance they're not going to come back. That's you know, part of the premise or the genre.
Exactly.
But Aaron had set it up to where whether she wins the fight or not doesn't matter. Just showing up for the fight was her death, you know, signing her death.
Exactly.
And that really raised the bar a little bit there on just the level of heroism or whatnot. And I'm looking forward to where they go next, both with Thor and with Jane Foster, and how that all plays out and stuff. I mean, he's done a great job, and not only, you know, has he been on the book for 5 years, but Marvel's kept him on the book for 5 years, allowing for this larger tapestry of a story to play out.
I mean, definitely.
How many times have we seen creators where their story that they've got has been just cut short, and it's like, well, I guess I can't finish it.
Yeah, it's true. I think Sanford Green, it was like several titles at Marvel. He's a good writer, but it just didn't get traction, didn't get the sales, and his book ended prematurely over and over and over. And so this has been very satisfying that he has had the run on this that he has, and he's still going strong. And it seems like there's no end in sight. He just keeps coming out with great stories. And one thing interesting on the art side is that when Saad Ribic left this, and he's over doing a book at Image, he's doing Versus right now. Mm-hmm. But he was an amazing artist, and I was like, oh my gosh, you know, he's gone. This book's going to go downhill on the looks. But Russell Dodderman is no slouch. He's really stepped it up. The detail in here is just amazing. And then whenever they have like a thing where you can vote at the end of the year for the best color artist, I always vote for Matt Wilson, and he's in here because he colors amazingly. He can use the colors of the rainbow without making it look like a cartoon, which is something hard to do.
Yeah. Well, and again, the way they did kind of the rainbow bridge portal there and stuff, and the way it kind of dissipates and stuff, it was nice.
Yeah, just breathtaking work. I mean, these guys together, they've done some amazing stuff. It's just gorgeous to look at. And then a great story to back it up. Yeah, I didn't think we should probably go into the details about how the fight between Mangog and Thor ends. So there is some mystery about how the death happens. I don't know if you want to talk about that, but
I don't think we need to. I mean, this is something that we knew she was going to die. They've been not only saying that in the title of the story, but building to that for literally years. And for them to not just kind of cop out there at the end or take a cheat or something like that, I really respect.
Yeah.
And for it to have both the emotional payoff and just it's a good death for a heroic character.
Yeah, I couldn't have asked for anything more. And knowing that it's coming and for it to still be entertaining tells you how great of a book this is.
Yeah. No, this is going to be, I think, one of the long-remembered runs on Thor, and there have been some great ones to compare it to. And I'm curious what's going to happen, you know, with kind of that next chapter and stuff on Thor.
Me too.
So it's good stuff. I'm going to go with an A on this. It was really well done.
Well, I'm right there with you, John. This one hit you in the feels. It's amazing art. It's amazing story. It's Jason Aaron. That's enough said. This is something that he's passionate about, and you can feel it when you read it. So definitely an A on this book.
Cool. Shall we go over to our other book?
Definitely, and this one was an interesting one for me.
This is one I'm very glad we did. It's the Comic Book History of Comics, issue number 4. I think the full title may be Comic Book History of Comics, Comics for All, number 4. It's by Image Comics. It's done by Fred Van Lente and Ryan Dunleavy.
Oh, it's IDW.
I'm sorry, it's IDW. I had it wrong on my notes.
No problem.
And in the show notes, remind me to fix that.
Okay, definitely.
Yeah, it's IDW. And but Van Lente and Dunleavy have been doing both this miniseries of 6 issues and the previous one. And it is a history of comics in comic book form. And they've done their research, and the amount of material they get into a single issue is sometimes staggering.
Yes.
I read issue 3 right before reading number 4. Not that I really needed to. They cover different topics. But that one was, I mean, the first half of number 3 was really focused on manga, how it works in Japan versus how comics work here, why it picked up, why it's not as popular, you know, comics aren't as popular as manga is, et cetera, et cetera. Very informative. The second half of that issue was on Air Pirates versus Disney and whatnot. This one, most of it was on the formation of the direct market, and then the later part was on kind of piracy and how that happened for comics. And I think anybody who is interested in the formation of the direct market, how we got to the situation we're in now, this is a must-read issue. It goes over so much of it in terms of how we comics left the newsstand, how the original, you know, returnable market worked, how the new one does, a recap of the boom and the bust of the 1990s. Some really interesting charts here and there on price hikes.
Yes.
And how prices are going up as sales are going down. It was just, I thought, phenomenal.
Yeah, I when you were talking with me about reviewing this, I was like, Sure, I'll give it a go, whatever. And when I got it, I kind of thumbed through it. And by the way, thank you, Eric from Cowabunga. He didn't have any extra copies of this, but he found one for me and got it to me quick in time. So that was amazing. But I was thumbing through this and just looking at the art, I was like, oh my gosh, what did I get myself into? It's kind of cartoony art,
Oh,
but
it's very cartoony art.
and I was just not for me, not for me. But then I actually when I read it, it's definitely something, like you said, I think everyone should read this just because of the history that's covered in here. And I learned some things. I know a lot about comic book history, probably not as much as you, John, but just like reading about the newsstand and all the fraud that happened there and what it took for something to be a hit. Like, I didn't know the publishers, they used to send stuff to, the newsstand, which is basically, like convenience stores or little news shops on the corner or wherever they're located, back in the day, grocery stores. If they had a 35% sell through, so one out of three comics actually sold, that was considered a success, which was kind of a shocking to me. I thought, you read the old sales and circulation history and you hear about millions of comics. Well, only one out of three of those probably sold, and sometimes less, which was just amazing that you hear about that stuff that you didn't know.
Somewhere I've got a spreadsheet I put together where I went through the statement of ownerships for Captain America, for like 2 decades or whatever. And, some of that covered during, the direct market era, but still there was a lot of the newsstand still going on during much of it. And the print runs, I mean, they would print like 5 times as many copies as they would actually sell
Which
just
is just
because,
insane.
oh yeah, it was horribly inefficient. But when you had the larger numbers, you could sell at a lower price, and just how the whole system works. This is a great kind of a primer on all of that.
So, yeah, it was kind of shocking to me that almost by becoming more efficient, the entire system becoming more efficient, and they're able to sell targeted and non-returnable, it almost led to higher pricing, which is kind of you would think it wouldn't be, but it actually did lead to higher pricing because instead of printing millions of copies, which is way less expensive, and 30% of 10 million or a million is a much better sell-through than 75% of 300,000, which is what you had later on in the 90s. That's what directly led to higher prices, and that's kind of continued as the attrition happens. And if we don't get enough new readers into the market, prices tend to have to go up because companies want to keep their margins or creators have their bills to pay. And then when they sell fewer copies, things go up. It's just the nature of the beast.
But to a certain degree, that was almost inevitable because, when we were selling stuff through the newsstand at 7-Elevens or where have you, they were making literally a penny or two per issue that they sold.
Yeah, kind of an annoyance they were talking about in the book.
It's more trouble to stock it than it's worth.
Yeah.
That's a bad business model.
It really is. And I was shocked to read in here that they didn't order the titles. You didn't go in there and say, "Hey, I want some Spider-Man and I want some of this and some of that." You just ordered a bundle and you got whatever you got. And so that led to people riding their bicycles all over town looking
Well,
to see who had what.
when I was growing up, I worked at a comic store, and one of the things the owner of that store did was kind of sub-distribute to a few, I don't know if they were literally newsstand outlets or not. I never went to those places, but he'd get a bunch of stuff, and it's like, okay, let's give them these, and that, or whatever. And there was a time and era where, I mean, now you know what's coming out by going to your comic store and looking at what's on the rack.
Yes.
But imagine if they got every, third title or 2 out of 3 or something, and you go to one store and see one selection, another store see another selection. That's how the spinner racks were.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, those spinner racks don't hold a crazy number of comics compared to, how many are produced over the course of a 4 month period or however many they would keep the stuff out for.
I go back to when I was a kid in a very small town in Florida, and my friends and I, we'd ride a bicycle probably like 2 miles, 3 miles to get to a convenience store where you pick up some comics. and they only had Marvel Comics, which is why I read Marvel Comics.
Mm-hmm.
I remember picking up, you know, like the first Wolverine off the newsstand or this, but sometimes stuff wasn't there. It just wouldn't be there. So you just have a hole and you just didn't read that issue. And I wasn't going to, you know, the next convenience store is probably 15 miles. I can't ride my bike there. So it was just, it was interesting. And then it wasn't until I was probably, and I'm trying to go back, you know, and think about this, but probably when I was in like eighth or ninth grade, when I kind of, probably about seventh or eighth grade, I kind of convinced my mom to drive me to a town, which was an hour drive away, where they had the first comic shop.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it. And I mean, that's just kind of how I grew up in a small town.
Yeah. Well, this is something that just the density of material in this issue, I think, far exceeds the typical arc in most comics. And
yeah.
The structure of this comic, I think, is fundamentally different than most because, one, it's a educational a treatise or something versus a narrative story. I mean, they're telling a narrative, but it's more along the this happened, then this happened, then this happened, like a biography or History Channel type TV show versus like a primetime drama.
Correct.
And that leads to some of this being more of an illustrated story than a true comic. Because sometimes what you're getting is, not sometimes, a lot of pages, what you're getting is the dialogue is just, I don't want to say color commentary or whatnot. It's flavoring. It's not the meat and potatoes of what the issue is about. And typically this kind of storytelling would drive me absolutely bonkers for a story, but it is the absolute right way to tell this kind of historical narrative of what happened for the comic industry.
Yeah.
And
I agree.
Yeah. Well, the art's incredibly cartoony, that kind of works in its favor in terms of don't get too wrapped up on the art. There's material here, if you will. But Ryan Dunleavy does a great job of taking what's being talked about and giving you kind of iconic pictures to go with it to help you kind of remember and visualize what's going on.
I agree. Yeah, it was. It's very interesting in the this issue is. I was thinking when you picked this issue is perfect for what we talk about, what you talk about with the sales numbers
mm-hmm.
and the direct market and how it all ties in and how it came to be and why we are doing what we're doing and what the market is doing and why it's doing that. So this is a really good piece. I was going to ask you what the other copies were. I guess you said issue 3 was about manga and there's another volume. This would be very good as a graphic novel, you know, it tying it all together. I could see it being read like that, but as an individual issue, it's great too, because I don't want to know anything about manga personally. So I could have skipped issue 3, go right to issue 4. There's no impact. And I was able to enjoy this and I enjoyed it way more than I thought I would. Just getting a little taste of history and just a reminder of how we got to where we are.
Yeah, there's certain issues that I've enjoyed a lot more than others based on my interest in that particular topic or whatnot. You know, it'd be like doing a survey of American history. If you're really into World War II, you may not care much about World War I, or maybe you do.
Yeah,
don't know.
Exactly.
This is something that they do have a collected edition of the first volume. I'm certain they're obviously going to do one of this. Highly recommend it, even if the totality isn't stuff you're fascinated by, just getting a sense of the overall history of comics, because a lot of what they did in the first volume was just, here's a history of American comics. Here's where it started, here's where the superheroes came in, here's what happened with Kirby, here's what happened over there, that kind of stuff.
I'd like to read that.
It's great material. It's something I highly recommend. And I really like how they're showing here that comics can be used for educational purposes as well as just for entertaining.
I agree.
And while there's a ton of material and a lot of text, it's not a hard read at all.
No. Definitely not a hard read. I think it's a very easy read for me. But at the same time, it took more time than either of the other two comics we read. So this one, I literally read every word, and you spend a good 30 minutes to read it, but it's not boring. It's not bland at all. It's good material.
Yeah, it's definitely a different sort of comic than the others we tend to review. Again, and just the structure, the pacing of the material and whatnot. But again, I think it's if you're interested in the history of comics, it's well worth reading. Certainly if you enjoy, when we're talking about the sales numbers and you're curious how the market got the way it got, this is an issue to go hunt down, and it'll give you a pretty good recap of a lot of the major turning points from how we went to the from the spinner rack to kind of where we are today. So for me, it was an A+. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a terrific read.
Yeah, I liked it more than I thought I would. Not reading any of the other issues, I didn't know what to expect. It started off slow, and I had marked it as a B+, but the reason why I went with the B+ versus like an A is because I was like, wow, they kind of crammed a lot of material in here. They went really quick. What are they going to do in the next issue? But now hearing that they don't feed off each other, I could see where you went with the A+. Me not reading it and just picking up this issue, I was just like, man, he's going a little too quick. He's going to run out of material. So I just didn't know what to expect.
And that's a fair point, because reading this, you're not going to know everything that happened in the direct market and how it formed. You're going to get the highlights.
Yeah, and I didn't know if he was going to like look at it like this and then go into a more detail. So I just didn't know what to expect. So that's why I went with the B+. I liked it, but not having any context with it, just I couldn't go with the A.
No, I can totally understand that. And I appreciate you taking the chance on it, and I'm glad you enjoyed it.
And I was going to say thank you for recommending this, because it's something I would have never picked up ever. Just kind of like I never would have read DC in the past. So I have you to thank for that. So this is something I'm really going to go back and probably email Eric and say, give me the trade on the first one. And then when the trade comes out on the second volume, I'm going to pick that up too, just so I can read it all together, even though it does have some manga stuff, which isn't normally my cup of tea.
Well, and again, it's the history of manga, and it was a good comparison between how and why that took root over there versus how comics exist here. And they were comparing and contrasting, like your story of having to go an hour over to the next town to go to a comic store versus they live in a culture where mass transit is the thing. And everybody has pretty easy access to the manga at the bus stop, the train stop, whatever.
Yeah, and if I would have grown up like that, let's say I was a kid in New York City, mm-hmm. and I grew up there, and there was a comic shop here and there, midtowns there, and you could get to it relatively easy without having to bug my mom and dad, I probably would have read a heck of a lot more comics growing up, especially if I would have had much of an allowance. But for me, it was such a chore. I could go to the comic shop maybe once a month if I was lucky, and then they opened a comic shop in a town that was about a 30-minute drive from us, and until I got a car, same thing, like once a quarter I'd go by there and I'd pick up a few things, whatever was out at that time. So my back history, my back comics, it's just a hodgepodge of this and that and everything in between.
Well, that may be one of the other things you enjoy about the first volume of this, is they give a pretty good overview of a lot of what's happened in comics. So things you may not have noticed because you just weren't able to access a comic store and stuff, it may say, oh, well, that's something I want to check out.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm for real. I'm picking this up. Eric, if you're listening, I'm picking it up.
Cool. Glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah. And then I was going to ask you, is this the week where the new previews is going to be coming out to us, where it's going to be disassembled?
This is when the April 1 comes out. We're recording this on March 27th. The new previews comes out tomorrow as we record this, last Wednesday as people listen. It has Boom and Dynamite in the premiere section. DC is still in the main part of previews. Boom and Dynamite are, I believe, listed after Image.
Okay.
And then the next month in May is when DC moves out to its own catalog.
Okay. All right. So we have to wait to see that. And then the other thing I was going to did, I don't know if you checked this. Well, yeah, you did. You commented on it. Dr. Mo on the Slack channel, I think it was last week we reviewed Infinity War Countdown.
Mm-hmm.
We got the announcement that the new Infinity War comic book is coming out. So that's going to be the big event for the summer. So
yeah.
I was correct. It's coming.
You were indeed. You called that one. I'm just curious about the price on that. How much money they're going to try to suck out of us.
Yeah, quite a bit.
No doubt.
I have a feeling it'll be a lot.
If it's good, if it's fun. I'm curious if this is going to lead into almost a rebirth or retooling of the Marvel universe, multiverse, whatever, coming out of this.
Yeah. I'm interested to see what happens, because we know Jonathan Hickman's coming back to Marvel, and he's a very long form writer, so that'll be interesting. And we just got Cebulski taking over as editor in chief.
Mm-hmm.
And really, a lot of this stuff that's been happening was set up, the legacy and everything, before he ever came to town. So this will be, I think, the first foray where we see, you know, what's coming under his leadership, where he's, you know, headed with the company. So I think it'll be interesting. They're changing up the creators. We're getting announcements of people that are coming out. So I appreciate the people on the Slack channel or in the forums putting information about stuff as it comes out. But I'm kind of excited to see. I'm hoping there's some good things that come out.
I'm hoping so, too. I'm curious about it. And, you know, we're in for an era of some change, both in terms of previews shaking up. Again, the powers that be over at Marvel, you know, with the new editor-in-chief there, one of the higher-ups, Diane Nelson over at DC, has taken a leave of absence, so that may shake things up a little bit at DC. It may not, don't know. But certainly there's a lot going on.
Yeah, a lot of stuff going on. So it's really interesting. I'm really interested to see what happens, because this is probably the longest run. I know this sounds sad, but I've been reading comics continuously without a break for about 7 years now. Six years now, because it's the tail end of 2012 when I got back in. And I'm not sure if I ever told you what got me back into comics, did I?
You may have. I don't remember.
Okay, it was a long time ago if I did. But I saw Drew was posting, you know, big things that have happened where you're going to be checking the sales and seeing things that have happened in the industry or just big events over the last 20 years or so, and seeing if it had any impact on sales. What are the big things that happened? And he was like, well, The Walking Dead came out, you know, and it came out to become the biggest TV series. And when The Walking Dead came out, I remember seeing the trailer for that on TV. And so my wife and I were watching. I was like, that's cool. I'm going to record that. I didn't know it was a comic book at the time. And then afterwards, I saw a commercial for Comic Book Man. I started recording it, which I've heard is a horrible TV show for people to watch. But I watched it, and I was like, my wife and I watched it. And she's like, oh, this is boring. But I'm like, hey, I have that comic. She's like, what? That thing's selling for $50. I'm like, yeah, it's in the garage. She's like, why is that in the garage? Get it out of there. So I started going back through my collection. It got me back into comics. That's when The Walking Dead came out.
That's funny.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's the power of shows like The Walking Dead, Smallville, Arrow, you know, others of that sort. It gets people that are kind of lapsed readers and gets them re-energized about comics.
Yeah, and then when I walked into the comic book store, Marvel Now was happening, the first Marvel Now, the Point One and all that. And so it was kind of cool that it was an easy way to come in and get in there. So I missed out on the DC New 52. Otherwise, I probably would have started with that because it's not intimidating going in there and starting with a number one. So it's just kind of interesting how that all played out.
Yeah, I think it all comes down to when you get into comics as to what you get into with comics.
Yes.
It just comes down to, you know, who's got a more accessible universe at the time, what looks more appealing, and what TV show, cartoon, video game, or whatever kind of drew you in.
It's true. People will ask me, you know, what I'm into, you know, or, you know, whether it's in the teleconference, people start talking about things. If you guys start talking about 1970s comics, I'm just listening and enjoying the discussion because I don't know a lot about them. But when did I get in? I'll know some 80s stuff. I'll know 90s stuff very well because mm-hmm. I could buy more regularly then because I was out of high school, or 92 I graduated and I could buy some stuff. But then I went to the Army. Then I got out of the Army and I bought comics again. So there's a lot of breaks with stuff that happens in your life. And so hitting those certain points, some things I'm super familiar with and some things I'm more lost with. And so I'm trying to get caught up on my history right now. And that's where I was asking you guys, like on the Slack channel, how old do you go with your reading, John? Like, how far back do you go?
Well, Nacho, I think it was on the Slack channel, has a theory that it's more or less around the time you're born, give or take, I don't know, 5 years or something like that. And it's funny because that kind of sort of holds true with me, because if I go kind of too far before, say, the mid-70s, I feel that the stories kind of alter a little bit and get to be, certainly by the time you get to the early 60s or something, granted that's a pretty big gap there.
Oh, yeah.
You're almost in the slideshow mentality. You know, Superman flies to planet, saves planet. Next slide, he's, you know, saving the day at the Daily Planet. It's the highlight reel, not the story.
Yeah, it was probably written just completely different, I imagine, then. And that's been something I'm worried about, because I want to get in touch with, you know, the roots of all these creators and the roots of these stories. So I was looking at it as like, do I get this Fantastic Four omnibus, you know, collecting the first 30 issues or not? It was being solicited. And I went and I pulled the trigger on it, but I'm worried if I get this thing, am I going to hate it? And I actually ordered the Jack Kirby Fourth World omnibus. Mm. And that was based on Eric. And I'll tell you what, using DCBS, I used to love DCBS. I would, you know, do my order online. But they're not going to give you a recommendation. That's why I started listening to your show and why I started listening to other shows, because I don't know what to listen to. And I didn't have a comic shop to go to and talk with someone. So I send Eric an email. I'm like, hey, what do you think about this? Or I send him a spreadsheet. I'm thinking about this, this, and this. And he wrote back. He's like, yeah, this one's popular, not my cup of tea. This one, for sure, get it. So based on his recommendation, he really kind of steers me towards what is going to be something that's good to read and not boring, which I appreciated.
Getting good recommendations like that are worth your weight in gold. There was a store I shopped at out in San Diego. It's long since closed down, but it was a comic gallery in Mira Mesa. And there was the manager there, Sarah, was really great. Did an awesome job running the store, but there was a guy, Joe, there who worked there for a while that I was reading as much as I'm reading now compared to how much was going out then, you know what I mean?
Wow, yeah.
I was reading less, but less was being published is what I'm saying.
Okay.
But I still had a decent enough percentage. I was getting almost all Marvel, all DC, whatever. Joe was able to say, you know, this title over here I think you're going to like. And I'm like, that's like a sword and sorcery, you know, a medieval kingdom kind of a thing. You really think I like? Yeah, trust me. Okay, I'd try it. You know what? He was right. And he recommended one. It seemed like either every week or every other week. And I'm one of those guys that's got that really long pull list. Finding something that's not on there is hard. Finding something that's not on there that really ought to be is even harder. And it really opened my eyes to a lot of independent comics and stuff like that that I wasn't getting at the time. And just getting those recommendations, to me, it comes down to somebody knowing what's out there, but also knowing what you like and having a good sense of why you like it, and giving a recommendation to your tastes, not just to what they read.
I couldn't agree more. Back when I did have a local comic shop that I used to go to in the past, there was a guy there. I think his name was Sam. And it was Coliseum of Comics, Orlando. It's a big chain. Mm-hmm. But with them, that guy, he would say, I'd say, oh, Young Avengers, I heard it's getting good reviews. He's like, that's a kid's book. You're not going to want to read it. I was like, okay, because not that it's a kid's book, but he's like, it's not going to be your cup of tea based on what you're reading. And so he would just speak to me in a way. I was like, okay, understand. And when you're paying $4 a pop, because there was no discounts there, that like little stamp card thing, you stamp your card, and after you fill up the card, you get $10 off. But it's basically like a 10% discount, but you paid full $4 or $3 per comic. That's a lot of money to fork out just to not know what if you're going to like it or not. And that's so tough, which is why it's nice that Eric helps us out with the discounts that he gives us, because I wouldn't be able to read half of what I read if I was paying the full $4 cover price. It hurts.
Oh, same here. Believe me.
Yeah. We all have budgets. And so, but I'll tell you what, I miss Sam's recommendations, but I'll tell you, Eric's helping me. You guys on the teleconference kind of steer me. And on the Slack channel, people will say, I get some IMs every now and then. I can't remember who it was right now. They're saying, check out the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles series. They give me like this certain series. I'm like, well, I'm not a Ninja Turtle fan, but he's like, trust me, you'll like it. So I may check it out, but I listen to what – I trust you guys to tell me what you guys like, and then I'll check out maybe an Amazon review. Then I'll email Eric and say, Eric, tell me, what's the deal? Would you read this? Would you spend this much? And he tells me yes or no. So that's kind of like my weeding out process.
Yeah, again, it comes down to, you know, if you're not finding the comics you're loving, figure out what you're looking for in comics. And that takes some introspection, some time, some thought. It's not always obvious. But once you've realized what it is about comics that you really enjoy and can articulate that, then people can help you find comics like that. You know, if you're into the intricate plots or whatnot, there are certain books. If you love the really detailed art, or maybe you want more abstract art and more out there plots or whatever. You know, there's something out there for everybody. It's just a matter of figuring out where is your wheelhouse and what's in that area.
Exactly. And then usually if you find something you like, you'll find about 10, 15 other things in that genre that you'll like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so, oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, because from there you can branch out by the artist, the writer, the publisher, you know, and get other things that are like it in some sense.
And before you know it, you're getting 200 comics a month like you, right?
Yes.
You dug the hole. No, the good thing is I've made a big dent in my stack, so I'm down to about 3 weeks worth of comics. So I should be caught up in the next week or two, and then I'll be current and I'll start reading some of my trades that I have.
You're doing way better than I am.
Are you still going in reverse?
I read maybe 25 comics this week.
That's in reverse.
Yeah, not full speed reverse, but only half. So I've got about 279 comics to read, and part of it is I've just had some other stuff going on. Part of it is I don't know if it's maybe the OCD hasn't kicked in or what. There are some weekends that I have just plowed through a ton of comics, and I this past weekend I had a few other things to do, but I had time to read the comics. I just didn't have the focus.
And that's a big thing, having focus.
I mean, it's hard to explain. The comics are there, I'm there. It's just, oh, let's see what's on the internet. Oh, you know, it's just that's some of what's going on, is I'm just not spending the time reading. And I've got some time this coming weekend, right before this episode goes up, but it's Easter weekend, so a little family time for that. And then the first weekend in April, the 7th and 8th, I'm going up to Dallas for Fan Expo.
Awesome.
So any of the listeners are there, contact me. Maybe we'll find a time to meet up and chat. That's always fun. But that's also the weekend that the numbers come out and the preview spotlights deadline is. So it's going to be a crazy busy weekend for me.
There'll be no comic book reading that weekend.
Almost certainly not. Matter of fact, I'm going to be doing good to pick up my shipment once I get back home, get them read that Monday night before we review on that Tuesday. So yeah, it'll be busy. So I'm going to get a little further behind, but certainly once the TV season ends, that'll free up some time, hopefully. And if I can just get a little bit more kind of in the reading zone, that'll help a lot.
Cool. Yeah, so I'm going to try and get my clips in this weekend, try to get them in before the 7th, because I know you're going to be under a crunch. But I'm sure most of you guys, as long as they're in by the 7th, you'll get it done, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Even if I'm not working on it that day, which I probably won't be, certainly if people get it done early, that means I can do some of the editing before I go up to Dallas and whatnot. I was able to do that last time. That helped a lot. But this may be one that when we're recording on that Tuesday the 10th, it's entirely possible that when we're done, I'm going to be slamming together the rest of the preview spotlight to be released the next morning. We'll find out. But the deadline is still the 7th, the morning thereof, that Saturday. There's information up on the forum. Matter of fact, also, I think on the Slack channel, Eric posted the consumer order form, so you can get the page numbers and stuff. That's a help.
That helps a lot, especially if you're using digital previews. It's no page numbers on that thing.
Or they have it on like every third page or something useful.
Yeah, it's not very fun.
It's crazy. But I'm looking forward to some good clips. We had a great turnout this last time, and there's, again, a lot of cool stuff coming out.
Yeah, I like to hear all the different people, because I tend to skip through mine. So you guys heard 2 hours. I heard maybe an hour and 40 minutes, or an hour and 30 minutes, because I had 13 of them, I think.
They were some good picks.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of good stuff coming out. A lot of good stuff.
Absolutely. So yeah, again, the preview spotlight deadline is Saturday, April 7th, that morning. And then the following Saturday, the 14th at 7 p.m. Central Time, is the Comic Book Page teleconference. And then also the 7th and 8th of April, I'm going to be up in Dallas at Fan Expo. So if anyone wants to chat face-to-face and they're going there, just let me know.
Awesome. Sounds good.
So anything else? Is that pretty much it?
That pretty much does it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number 41 from DC, Daredevil number 600 from Marvel, and Squarriors number 3 from Devil's Due / First Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.